Zimbabwe, and welcome to Live Talk. We're coming to you live from Studio 7 at the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your host, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. And today on Live Talk, we're discussing about the certification of the U.S. presidential results by the United States Congress in Washington today. President-elect Donald Trump won the election against Vice President Kamala Harris. President-elect Trump wants to slash government spending. A proposed advisory commission called the Department of Government Efficiency will lead the effort. It's not a new concept, as VOA's Dora Mekwa reports. American leaders have tried to reduce the role of government almost since the beginning. Let's hear more.
Billionaire businessman Elon Musk wants to slash $2 trillion in federal spending. He'll be co-head of the Department of Government Efficiency, a proposed Donald Trump presidential advisory commission. It's not the first time a U.S. administration has pledged to cut government expenses.
Presidents have been talking in one way or another about downsizing or reducing the role of government since the founding of the republic.
It started with America's third president, Thomas Jefferson, in the early 1800s. Jefferson eliminated some military and government jobs, temporarily lowering costs.
I am convinced that at least 4 million have been given employment.
In the 1930s, Franklin Delano Roosevelt expanded the federal workforce to cope with the Great Depression. Roosevelt's New Deal employed millions, providing relief for the poor while stimulating the economy. The jobs ended once the crisis was over.
I, Ronald Reagan, do solemnly swear.
In the 1980s, Ronald Reagan formed the Grace Commission, asking the group of about 150 business leaders to find ways to eliminate inefficiency.
President Reagan asked the Grace Commission to look at the government with an eye towards making it work more like a business.
But the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library website says that most of the recommendations, especially those requiring legislation from Congress, were never implemented. Still, some historians say Reagan succeeded in shifting the national conversation in favor of a smaller role for the federal government in solving public problems.
It was a fundamental sea change from, you know, the previous century, really, of expansion of the role of government in society.
In the 1990s, Bill Clinton worked to cut about 300,000 federal jobs, mostly through retirements and the outsourcing of services.
Certainly one of the more significant administrations in terms of reducing the role of government of the modern era.
During his first term, Donald Trump ordered a federal hiring freeze and other cuts. Now he wants his Department of Government Efficiency to finish the job. Some question the wisdom of taking a business approach to running the government.
When you're the government, you are responsible to the people. And your goal is not to make money. Your goal is to provide services and defend the nation. There's a lot of fraud and waste in the private sector. So I'm not that sure that business people are necessarily the best people to even find out, to even discover fraud and waste.
Trump and Musk are using one tool to get their point across that wasn't available during past efforts to cut government.
There can be a faster and more comprehensive response because of social media. Members of Congress tend to respond more to social media than the old-fashioned letters they used to get.
In many cases, Congress has to agree before any cuts can be made. Dora McQuar, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Dora. 6 days of official funeral ceremonies marking the life and legacy of the 39th U.S. President Jimmy Carter are underway in his home state of Georgia, where VOA's Ken Farabao has more.
The sun rises over Plains, Georgia, differently these days for shop owner Philip Kurland, as he and others in this rural community of about 700 people mourn the passing of its most famous resident, Jimmy Carter.
We were hoping we were going to be planning his 101st birthday, but the realization is he'll be with Rosalind. He'll be in a far better place, and he's really done as much as he can for the community and for the world at this point.
While he was known by the codename Deacon to the Secret Service officers who protected him for nearly five decades through more than 140 different countries, Jimmy Carter is more than a former president and humanitarian to those who lived alongside him and the place he called home for a century. As Carter's hearse and motorcade made its way through the town at the beginning of 6 days of funeral activities, Curlin reflected on Carter's personal impact on him.
There goes my hero.
It's the beginning and the end.
Jill Stuckey is a Carter family friend and superintendent of the Jimmy Carter National Historical Park, which includes his Depression-era boyhood farm outside Plains, where the funeral motorcade paused on its journey through Georgia.
So a president starts planning their funeral the day after they're elected. This has been planned for decades.
A plan Stuckey and others are faithfully fulfilling as Carter's flag-draped coffin made its way through Georgia.
I haven't grieved yet. I'll probably grieve when it's all over with.
Kim Fuller is Jimmy Carter's niece, the daughter of his well-known brother, Billy Carter. She's also his neighbor in Plains and carries on his legacy at Maranatha Baptist Church, where Carter taught Sunday school lessons since leaving the White House in 1981. While she admits the funeral activities are keeping her busy, there are difficult moments of reflection.
It kind of, something just kind of flooded over me. I'm saying, you know, we're doing this because he's dead. He's gone. And I had to go outside, you know. So there are moments when it hits me just overwhelmingly.
As members of the U.S. military stand at attention at Carter's flag-draped coffin at the Carter Center in Atlanta, thousands of visitors like Atlanta resident Walter Ramsey have one final opportunity to connect with Georgia's only president.
I wasn't alive for his presidency, but this really helps make it feel like you know Jimmy.
People will continue to pay their respects to President Carter in repose here at the Carter Center until Tuesday. That's when he'll be transported to the National Capital Region for official ceremonies there, before he returns to Georgia when the official ceremonies take place in his hometown of Plains, Georgia, which will also be his final resting place. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Atlanta, Georgia.
And now back to our main topic, discussing the certification of the United States presidential elections. The U.S. Congress is meeting today to certify President-elect Donald Trump's presidential election victory over Vice President Kamala Harris. However, 4 years ago, hundreds of Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol trying to stop Congress from certifying Democratic President Joe Biden's victory over Trump. Please stay tuned as we take a short break. We'll be right back.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
For those that have just joined us, please note that we are streaming live on all our Facebook pages, VOA Shona, VOA Studio 7, and VOA Ndebele. And we're also live on YouTube at VOA Zimbabwe. And joining us to discuss the issue, we are joined by Ms. Pearl Matibe, a geopolitical analyst based in Washington, D.C. We also have Advocate Kennedy Masie of All Hands on Justice and Mr. Tendai Mbofana, the program's director for with the Zimbabwe Network for Social Justice. But we'll start off with you, Advocate Masie, who is on Skype, before we roll over to Ms. Matibe. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, Advocate Masie, why are these results certifications done by Congress? And also, what's your take on what happened 4 years ago at the same Congress?
Yes, these are certification, the results of, they are certified by Congress in terms of the Constitution. And there is actually a law that enables the Congress to actually, you know, count these votes after the elections. This has been happening since the inception of the Republic. And it's important that these votes are counted in Congress in order to have them certified, the first thing, and also to officially endorse the results that came out of the elections.
Thank you so much. We'll come back to you. Over to you, Ms. Matibe. What is the significance of the certification of the U.S. presidential election results, which is happening today?
Thank you so much for having me. I just want to echo initially before, you know, to kind of preface my remarks on what has been mentioned so far, that today, January 6th has been significant. It's always been significant, right? But this year's certification of election results is a reaffirmation of democratic processes in the United States. It's an event that is prescribed by the Constitution. So we see Congress confirming the results of the Electoral College, officially declaring the winner of the presidential election, President-elect Donald Trump. Today, we've already seen Vice President Vance in the Capitol building. A couple of things to mention about the significance of today's event. So despite the recent political polarization and the heightened sort of public scrutiny around the 2024 certification results, we need to also remember that what Vice President Kamala Harris will be doing today is not all that different to what happened for Al Gore. Remember, she is certifying an election in which she lost, right? So in January 2001, then Vice President Al Gore presided over the certification of results in the 2000 presidential election, which George W. Bush won, right, after a contentious legal battle over Florida's electoral votes, which was ultimately decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in the Bush versus Gore case. Now we see differently this year, which is the exciting part about how to see America's democratic processes unfold, is that Vice President Kamala Harris now is presiding over the same process, an election which obviously she's not getting reelected, right? So the comparison here in both of these instances is that it helps us reflect the significant role that vice presidents, the institution of the position of vice president, mm-hmm. as the presiding officer, right? That's the presiding officer of this joint Congress, both the House and the Senate in Congress today, as mandated by the Constitution. So I think the Gore and Harris cases both demonstrate the commitment to upholding democratic norms, which is important in ensuring the integrity of the process. I think that's very important. So these moments highlight the importance of impartiality of a vice president in respect of the Constitution and maintaining public trust. I think the one significant thing that we should observe about this process today is is public trust in the electoral system. The public must trust the process as they see the process unfold. So these actions serve us as reminders, right, to ourselves of the dignity and the responsibility inherent in the office of the Vice President of the United States of America, particularly during these pivotal moments in American democracy. Back to you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Matibe. Coming over now to you, Mr. Mbofana, do people in Zimbabwe follow such proceedings as the certification of U.S. presidential election results? What have you seen on the ground?
Yes, thank you so much, Mavi. Yes, people in Zimbabwe do follow. I will not say the cross section of Zimbabwe follow, obviously, because of other issues that affect Zimbabwe, the economic situation. You also find that access to information in Zimbabwe is very segregated. You find that there are marginalized areas, especially the rural areas, where penetration of such things as information technologies is very limited, if non-existent. So you find that that section of the population is not very privy to such things that are happening. But I can assure you that people in urban areas, they are quite fascinated and interested, intrigued, in fact, by the going on in the United States. Every time, each time that there is an election in the United States, I am sure a vast majority of those, especially in the urban areas, will be following intently. This is because urbanites, so to speak, I don't want to be discriminatory, but urbanites in Zimbabwe are very interested in issues to do with democracy. Mm-hmm. That's why you find in our own political landscape, those in urban areas tend to be very vocal, very passionate about issues of democracy, even here in Zimbabwe, pushing for democratic change in Zimbabwe, democratic transformation in Zimbabwe, because they'll be watching and following intently what will be happening in places such as the United States of America, and they'll want to emulate that and to see it also happening in Zimbabwe, where we find this institutions of state that are independent, that hold the other arms of government to account, be it the executive, the judiciary, the legislature. Those institutions are there for checks and balances, where no one institution or one arm is overriding powers over the other. So that is the problem that we've seen in Zimbabwe, and that we can have all power or most power vested in only one arm of the government, that is the executive, and every other arm, be it the legislature or the judiciary or state institutions like the Electoral Commission, they just become appendages of the executive so that they can be directed on what to do or how to fear they might not even hold the executive to account. That's why you find in Zimbabwe they is no such thing as democracy, because everything is in the hands of the executive, and everyone else just plays the tune that is being called by the executive. That is why we then call Zimbabwe a dictatorship, because of such things. In the United States, we cannot expect that to happen. Even with Donald Trump, he is potentially a dictator. If he had been the president of Zimbabwe, he could have been a ruthless dictator, just like we are seeing here. But what stopped him from being a ruthless dictator who refuses to even vacate office and to concede defeat, with the strong institutions, state institutions that we find in the United States of America, that said, no, you cannot do that. The Congress, like what you mentioned on the 6th of January, they proceeded, they refused to be intimidated. The electoral institutions, they refused to be intimidated into bulging and saying that elections were rigged in favor of Joe Biden. So you find what we call democracy, when you say a country is democratic, we don't necessarily mean the president or the leader himself is necessarily democratic. What we mean by democracy are the institutions that hold the executive to account. The very fact that the United States has those strong sticks and balances is an acknowledgement that a leader in himself can be dictatorial. A leader, power is intoxicating. As they say, power is corrupting. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. So any leader has the potential to become a dictator. It doesn't matter which country you are in. Any leader can be intoxicated by power, can become a dictator. But what differentiates a democracy and a dictatorship is that the institutions in that country are strong. In a democracy, they are strong. They will always hold the leader to account. They will always keep him in check or her in check, and they will prevent him from getting intoxicated by power.
Thank you so much. Todzoka kwamuri, Advocate Masie. Tiri kuona apo uyezve tanga tiri kunzwa vambofana vari kutaurawo maonero ari kuitwa zvinhu kunyika dzakadai seZimbabwe. Pane zvingadzidzwe here neAfrica neiyo Zimbabwe pane zvatiri kuona zviri kuitika imo muno muAmerica pane zvino?
Hongo, I think zvingadzidzwe apapa inyaya yekuti hurumende kauti maprocesses ehurumende, especially kana achiuya kuma elections, anofanira kurespectwa. Zvatakaona 4 years ago, I think zvinhu zvatowanzokuona kunyika dzedu dzokuti panoita vanhu vanonovota, but zvido zvevanhu zvoita senge zvisina kukosheswa. Then pozoita mhirizhonga. izvi zvatokuona izvi zviri kuitika nhasi especially nema processes ari muno muAmerica ndezvekuti pari kuita yatingati peaceful transfer of power. Nangwa hazvo vanhu vachipokana kudani maybe nemutungamiri ari kuuya but mainstitutions anenge aripo kubvira narini anofa kurespectwa kuti ivo vanenge vachizopindawo maofisi akaita semaofisi president aya vanorespecta atingati magovernment institutions and also pachirungu yatingati matenants edemocracy. Izvi zvinobatsira kuti vanhu vave neconfidence zvekare muhurumende yavo inenge ichivatonga kuti aiwa isusu tiri safe, hurumende inorespecta zvido zvedu, hurumende yedu inorespecta the constitution, inova the founding document re any democracy. Kuti zvinhu zvakashata, nyangwe zvakashata hazvo, nyangwe pakapinda munhu akaita sei, at least my institutions edu anotiprotecta, nekuti hurumende iyoyo inenge irimo inenge ichirespecta atingati mafundamental values anenge achivaka nyika iyoyo.
Tinotenda. Coming to you, Ms. Matibe, we see that this certification of presidential results is also running concurrently with the funeral of the late Jimmy Carter, and you've been heavily involved in that funeral. Tell us a little bit about your knowledge of what's going to happen as we await to see the inauguration of both events.
Thank you so much, Marvelous, on both of these issues. Yes, you're quite correct. I'm closely monitoring and tracking the processes and the stages. So there are three essential stages in how an American president presidential funeral is conducted. But I just want to quickly first respond to this issue, the mention of Donald Trump as a dictator. I think I do understand why some Zimbabweans might characterize Donald Trump as a dictator, given his strong personality and polarizing rhetoric, and sometimes his bellicose language, right? It is an unconventional approach. But what I do want to say is this. What is clear and what has been clear is that first, Americans made a choice through the ballot, and Trump's return to the political stage in 2024's election was not due to coercion. Dictators would have coerced voters. Okay, there was no manipulation. The result was a democratic process. So Trump raised significant funds. He leveraged his well-established contacts and his brand. Whether you like his brand or whether you don't like his brand, right? He ran a campaign. I followed his campaign. I was at his rallies. You know I traveled to Wisconsin to the RNC, right? I also traveled to Kamala Harris's campaigns, and I was with them in Chicago and the DNC, right? So the campaign of the Republican Party resonated with the American population, the electoral population. And so a substantial portion of that electorate made a choice. And so what we see at President-elect Trump coming back to office is a testament of the dynamism of democracy. So embracing democracy can be difficult, but diverse voices were heard in the American election, right? Whether you like the decision and outcome or not. So having covered myself, as you know, Marvelous, mm-hmm. I've covered the Trump administration in the first term. I'm very familiar with his governing style. So while it has often sparked controversy, without a doubt, it operated within the framework of U.S. institutions. And these institutions, as my colleague Ms. Macia was just mentioning a minute ago, it is these American institutions, from the Congress to the judiciary, that have made and have remained strong and independent, right? Which we might not find in a dictatorship regime, mm-hmm. right? But the institutions of the United States are strong.
Thank you for that clarification.
In these moments, right? Now, I just want to mention, you were talking about the funeral of Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
And yes, I will be going to the inauguration, and I'll share more when I'm at the inauguration and so on. But the three main stages in a presidential funeral is the first stage is the ceremonies of the home state. That's why it started on the 4th and he was in Georgia and so on. The second stage, very quickly, is the body then gets moved, and it will be moved tomorrow, January 7th. It'll come to Washington. It'll lie in state at the U.S. Capitol. And then there are various ceremonies. The entire public is given the opportunity to come and give their last respect. Anyone in the general public can go online and sign his book. It's available online. And then the third stage is his return back home, right? So the final burial and his final resting place, which is really basically he will be interred at a private ceremony back in Georgia. So he'll make the trip back to here to D.C. He'll be in D.C. tomorrow. And then on the 9th, that's when he will be finally laid to rest. So the funeral is handled between the United States Department of Defense as well as a couple of other institutions. So it is cause for us to understand not just the United States, but Zimbabwe and many countries across the world, how we honor heads of state in a structured way, how we create and symbolize national unity. This is a moment. This moment of the passing of former President Jimmy Carter is a moment of how a country unites, even in this period of mourning. Mm-hmm. It's about national unity. It's about the country's legacy, as well as, of course, his own personal legacies, whether you like Jimmy Carter, whether you didn't like Jimmy Carter, right? So it helps us look at how these individuals who lead countries and nation states, how they're memorialized. And it's a time of personal reflection as well. So it's a contribution to this whole issue of the institution of a presidency. And yes, I will be covering and working with President-elect Trump in the coming administration. We are bracing and have been in communication with his transition team on a day-to-day basis. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but we're expecting a lot of very sharp and possibly shocking changes on day one, by January 20. So we'll be seeing how that plans out. Thanks, Marvelous.
Thank you so much there, Ms. Matibe. Coming back to you, Mr. Mbofana, your last word. You heard there Ms. Matibe really clarifying the difference between dictatorships. So your last word as we wrap up with you.
Thank you so much, Mandy. Yes, I do acknowledge that there can be a difference between a dictatorship and a democracy, and interpretations can vary on what a dictatorship is. Well, I did not say that the American system or Trump is a dictator. I said he has the potential to become a dictator. Even I've got the potential to become a dictator. So what checks and strong institutions do is to prevent someone like me from becoming a dictator, because power does intoxicate. It doesn't matter who you are and who democratic you think you are. Once you taste power, and there's nothing to keep you in check, there's nothing to keep you from diverging from the constitution, if it is a democratic constitution to begin with, you have the potential. Zimbabwe's got one of the best constitutions in the world, but you find that if you do not have strong constitutions that hold the leader to account, it doesn't matter whether Chamisa comes in, whether it's Mnangagwa, whether it's me, as I said, if I'm to get to be the president of Zimbabwe tomorrow with one of the best constitutions in the world and have weak state institutions that do not hold me to account, that power is going to get to my head. Power is going to turn me into a dictator.
Thank you so much.
That's why we need those strong state institutions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mbofana. And I'll round off with you, Advocate Masie. Your last word.
Yes, I think this inauguration will go on very well. There have been new laws that were put in place. There's the Electoral Count Reform Act. So I know people ask, like, is there a chance that probably Vice President Kamala Harris might have her own opinion? The answer is no, because there's now new law that only makes the vice presidency's presidents there, or the officiating of those electoral votes, just more or less a ceremonial. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you to Ms. Pearl Matibe and Advocate Kennedy Masie, and also Mr. Tendai Mbofana for joining us, and also to our callers who we did try to call, but we're not successful. So that brings us to the end of our show. Signing off in Washington, I'm Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye.